This week on the Out of Chicago podcast, camera settings for night photography, an interview with photographer Levi Sim, and photographing Chicago's Buckingham Fountain. Welcome back to the Out of Chicago podcast. This is episode 4. I'm your host, Chris Smith, and I really appreciate everything you guys have done. I appreciate all the downloads, all the reviews on iTunes. It's been great. Love hearing your feedback. I'd really appreciate it if you went to iTunes and left a review. There's a link in the show notes to this episode. Go to outofchicago.com/episode4, and you'll see the link right at the top. I've been wanting to do this podcast for at least a couple of years now, and people keep talking me out of it. You know, it's way too much work. It's not going to be worth it. And I started doing it, and what I found is I love it. This is so much fun. It's really fun to interview people, other photographers. I've had a fun time just kind of getting my words down, you know, rather than getting them down on paper and on the internet, but to kind of record them here, because I just love talking photography. And I love hanging out with other photographers. I don't know what could be better. So I've really enjoyed it so far. As of right now, my plan is to try and get a podcast out at the beginning of every week. So every Monday morning when you get in your car to go to work, I plan to have a new podcast waiting for you in your podcast player. So subscribe to it. It'll be there. It'll be waiting for you. And a good way to start the week, right? Now, Tony Reynez and Ann Belmont, they've been leading a lot of photo walks on the weekends for the Garden Photographic Society. Well, that's a fancy way of saying the Chicago Botanic Garden Camera Club. So the Garden Photographic Society has been leading these walks, and they're inviting anyone from the Out of Chicago site that follows the Out of Chicago site to join them on these walks. They've been a lot of fun. They've been well attended, and the people that come, they're always really cool. So come to the next one, pay attention, subscribe to the site to see when the next Out of Chicago walk will be. Now, this week on the site, we've had some pretty good articles. My favorite was the fact that I was able to announce that I had my first article on Digital Photography School. And if you don't know Digital Photography School online, it's probably the biggest photography blog on the internet. And they do a great job having a lot of good writers on there, all sorts of tips, everything related to photography. And my article was 5 advanced tips for light trail photography, so shooting car trails like in the city, and kind of gave a little bit more advanced tips. I think they were a lot of fun. It was well received, shared all over the internet. Really enjoyed it. And if you are coming to the Out of Chicago site and podcast because of that, well, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. Another article about a week ago, Mike McCauley, he wrote an article, Street Photography Do's and Don'ts in Chicago. It was kind of do's and don'ts anywhere, but was also able to apply it to Chicago. That was a cool article. So look for that one. And Wendy Bright, you know, Wendy, she writes the architecture articles for our site. Well, she also is highlighting all of the speakers at the Out of Chicago conference. And this week, she's highlighting Marie Lagneau. She's a wonderful street photographer. She's getting more and more popular on Google+ and all around the internet. She's a great photographer. She's going to be speaking at the Out of Chicago conference, which is less than a month away now. Please go sign up. And Wendy did a really nice article on her and everything that Marie is up to. And another one you might want to check out is Keith French. He is down south, southern Illinois. And he did a thing on photographing Shawnee National Forest. He really knows this area better than most. He even leads workshops down there for photographers. He does a couple of them a year. So check out that article on photographing Shawnee National Forest. Last weekend, we had our night photography tour with Rick Seidel, and we had a great turnout. We had a lot of people there, maybe too many people, but we had a really good time. We got a lot of great shots, and I wanted to share one story from it. We were lined up in front of this nice hotel, and we had, you know, everybody lined up. It was more than 10 people all lined up in front of the hotel, and they've all got their tripods. Everyone's shooting up at the buildings. The light is great. Everyone's loving it. Traffic's going by. Everything's great, getting great shots. And whenever we do this, we've always got people will walk by and they say, is there someone famous coming out? Are you like the paparazzi? Like, what's going on here? And every time it's like, no, it's a photo tour. You know, we're giving tips. We're, you know, just kind of, it's an out of Chicago group. Here's our site or whatever. So we kind of are a little embarrassed by that. But this time, one of the hotel valets, he looks over, he says, oh, well, what do you mean there's no one famous here? Well, that's Derek Jeter that's walking by. Derek Jeter walks behind every tripod that was there. No one catches him. He jumps into a Land Rover and drives off. Derek Jeter right there in town playing the White Sox. And not a single person got a picture of him. What are you going to do? The first segment this week is camera settings for night photography. Last week we talked about the equipment that I use when I go out to shoot at night, and this week we're going to talk about how I use that a little bit. First thing I'll say is that I'll always shoot in RAW. I will not be shooting JPEGs. Memory's cheap enough, and with a RAW file you can get a lot more out of it. So I don't know what you're doing, but I've talked to people, and even in the last few weeks they're like, oh, maybe I should shoot RAW. Yes, you should shoot RAW. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Now, you know, there's one person out there that really pushes shooting RAW, and that is Fro Knows Photo. If you watch him on YouTube, he's kind of a crazy character, but that's his big thing. He's got his t-shirts made up. I shoot RAW. Like, well, okay, that's kind of like Derek Jeter saying, I use pine tar on my bat. Oh, okay, good job. You should. Yeah, it's just a tool. Yeah, but you should shoot RAW. You should. But you don't have to be that excited about it. Now, as far as camera settings for exposure, if I'm shooting at night, well, I like to shoot, be at like an ISO 400 typically. I might need to go a little bit higher or a little bit lower than that, just depending. But I usually start at ISO 400, and a lot of times I'll end the night and see, oh, I never changed my ISO the entire time. So ISO 400 works pretty well. If you shoot it at 100 or 200, it'll just turn out that you'll get a lot of situations where it's going to be like a minute long exposure, a minute and a half long exposure. And if you want to get like the cable release so you could shoot those, you could do that. But I just don't think it's worth it. I think with a camera that you bought in the last few years with modern technology, I think the ISO 400 is going to give you just about as clean of an image as 100 or 200. So you may as well shoot it at 400 and get 20 second long exposures instead of, you know, minute and a half long exposures. So I shoot at 400, and that's kind of what I recommend to people when they go out. I'll always shoot on manual exposure, so it's not aperture priority shutter priority, it's on manual exposure. The first thing I'll do is I'll set my aperture just based on the shot. So it might be f8 or f11, or if there's a shot where I really want to get a shorter shutter speed, I might go down to like 5.6 or f4. Or if it's a shot where I really want to bring out like a starburst effect or something, I might shoot it at f18 or f22. And usually I'm not too concerned that, yeah, there might be a little bit of diffraction, but if I'm going for that look and I want to get that nice starburst effect, shoot it at f22 and you'll be fine. Once I've figured out the aperture that I'd like to use, then that means the only thing I need to change, I've got it at ISO 400, I've got my aperture, the only thing I need to change is my shutter speed. Now, a lot of people ask me, like, what exposure metering mode do you use? Do you use center weighted? Do you use this Nikon matrix metering? And I say, I don't use any of it. It's a little bit controversial, but when I'm shooting out at night, I use live view pretty much 100% of the time to set my exposure. What I mean by that is that I've got my camera on the tripod. I'm not looking through the viewfinder. I'm looking on the LCD on the back of the camera, and I'm judging my exposure based on how the LCD looks. Now, some lower level Nikon cameras do not allow this. They don't do what's called exposure simulation. But if you've got any Canon camera, or if you've got kind of the higher level Nikon cameras, you can put it in exposure simulation mode, which is what I'll leave it in all the time, and it will show you what the exposure will look like. And people argue that, maybe it's not exactly right on. People argue that your LCD is not good enough to judge your exposure. Well, maybe it's off by half of a stop. Maybe it's off by an entire stop. Well, I don't think that that's enough to really screw up your photo. So let's say it is off by an entire stop when you're looking at the back of the screen. You can fix that in Lightroom. And beyond that, when I'm shooting at night, I guess is another thing to add to the camera settings, most of the time I'll be bracketing and shooting 3 shots or maybe even 5 shots altogether. That way, if I do kind of screw it up a little bit, I'll just use the higher or the lower exposure. And again, people say, you know, get it right the first time, get it right on that first shot. Well, did you know that there's this thing that's bracketing here? This has been here for decades. It's been on the cameras. People say, what do you mean it's been on there for decades? HDR is only, 5-10 years old. Well, it wasn't made for HDR. Exposure bracketing was made so that you could go out, take 3 shots, and make sure that one of them would be the right exposure. And a lot of amateurs wouldn't do that back in the day when shooting film because it's expensive to do that for every single shot you take. But nowadays with digital, you may as well. If you're shooting street photography, you might feel like this is cheating, and that's okay. If you want to just get the one shot and say, I captured that moment and I did it and I didn't have to rely on anything else, and then that's fine. But if you're shooting on a tripod and you're trying to get a great cityscape shot, then I think you do whatever you can to get the very best shot that you can. And speaking of me doing a bad job of getting things right in camera, I had a lot of people asking me last week on the tour, what white balance are you using? And I think I really disappointed them when I said, I think I have it in auto. Well, if you shoot in RAW and you have your camera setting in auto or whatever you have it in, if you're shooting in RAW, you totally get to pick whatever white balance you want to use when you get it back to the computer. By shooting it in RAW, it's simply taking the RAW data and not applying anything in terms of how the white balance is to your raw image. Now, it will change the way that it looks on the back of your camera. So if you're shooting it in cloudy white balance, it might look warmer on the back of the camera. And it will look like that when you bring it into Lightroom, but it doesn't affect the picture at all in any way. It doesn't affect the raw image at all to be shooting it in a wrong white balance or to be shooting it just in auto. So a lot of times I'll put it in auto. If I want to see a warmer look to the city, I will put it in like cloudy. And I think that you just go with one of those and I think that you'll be fine for these types of shots. When I'm working in Lightroom, the white balance setting though, I mean, that's absolutely critical to getting your shot to look the way you want it to. It just doesn't have to be set on your camera. When I go into Lightroom, that's the very first thing that I'll change is I'll get the white balance right. In the end, I might tweak it a little bit, but I try and get it right for how I want the shot to look right off the bat. I also noticed a lot of people on the tour using autofocus, and autofocus is great for sports and for people and for action and, well, all sorts of things. But when you're out shooting at night, it's the last thing you want to do. Usually when I go out, well, anytime I'm using a tripod, I will put it on manual focus 100% of the time. And what I do is I'll use the LCD, I'll use the live view to compose the shot. And I'll use the live view to actually focus the shot. You can zoom in, you can zoom way in on whatever object you're trying to focus on. Focus on that, then go back and take your shot. Typically, if I'm out shooting on a tripod, I will put my lenses in manual focus and I will leave them there the entire night and I won't use the autofocus at all. The other thing I typically do, and some people say this is necessary, some say it's not. I guess it depends on the lens probably that you're using. But I will always turn the image stabilization or the vibration reduction on a Nikon, I will turn that off. So that's kind of up to you. I think some modern day lenses kind of know you're on a tripod and don't try and bring it in anyway. But if you do have it on and it's an older lens, what happens is that it thinks that there's like a slight change. And so it tries to compensate for it. And then it kind of overcompensates and it goes back and forth. And you're actually better off. I've seen people shoot some real blurry images on a tripod. And they're like, how the heck could this be blurry? I'm on a tripod. And it's because they've got their image stabilization on. And as soon as they turned it off, the picture was perfect. So I know without a doubt that this is an issue at times. So think about that. If you're getting blurry images and you don't know why, you can turn that image stabilization off. It's not going to really help you when you're on a tripod. Well, I will say that I heard Juan Pons on the Digital Photo Experience podcast talking about this and said that when he's using like a 500 or 600 millimeter lens, it actually does help him have the image stabilization on. I thought that was kind of interesting. It's not a situation I'm used to dealing with, but I suppose the vibrations that would run through that entire thing and through the camera, those might actually get helped by the image stabilizer. But other than that, for the rest of us mere mortals without the 500-600 millimeter lenses, I say that you leave your image stabilization off when you're on a tripod. And the last setting I'll have on the entire night is the 2-second delay. I talked about this last week. I said I don't use a shutter release. I don't use like a wireless thing to trigger my camera. I simply put it on 2-second delay, and that means that I'll hit the trigger. 2 seconds later, it takes a picture. I find that's the best way to do it for me, and I just love that I don't have anything extra hanging off my camera, and I don't have to worry about any kind of setup with a Wi-Fi or anything. So it's a 2-second delay. I find that it works great. So as far as my camera settings, shoot in RAW, ISO 400, use manual exposure. First, you pick your aperture. Maybe it's f8, maybe f11. After that, you adjust your shutter speed to get it to look right on the back of the LCD. Once you have that, you're ready to take your shot. The white balance, I'll usually be on auto or cloudy. Manual focus every time. Image stabilization off, and use the 2-second delay. You do all those things and follow my tips from episode 3 when we talked about the equipment that I use, and you're going to get some amazing night photos. So next, we have our interview with Levi Sim. I met Levi down at Skip Summer School, and he's kind of a celebrity amongst those people. He's got a ton of energy. He's a great guy. He's just a really nice guy, really helpful, and he's going to be speaking at the Out of Chicago conference this year. He's going to be teaching Lightroom, and I've already seen him teach Lightroom before. I know he's great. He's also writing a book. You'll hear about that today. And here it is, our interview with Levi Sim. Thank you very much for joining us, Levi.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's really a pleasure. I'm a big Chris Smith fan, so I'm honored to
well,
to be
I
here
appreciate
with...
that. Yeah, I met you just a couple of years ago at Skip Summer School, and I mean, I think everyone there knows you, and yeah, at least through Skip Summer School, you're totally famous. So, and that seems to be growing daily through everything you're doing with whether it's your own site or through Photo Focus now as well. Actually, let's start with that. Do you mind? I mean, what's it like? You're working on Photo Focus. You're writing on the site. You're doing books. You're doing all this with. I mean, working along with Scott Bourne, with Rich Harrington, and all these other amazing people. What's that been like?
Oh man, it is the coolest thing. They're just good people. Like they give you opportunity and they help you, and it's just been amazing. And I feel like. I feel like the bat boy for the New York Yankees or something.
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think you're the bat boy. I mean, you're taking charge of a lot of things.
No, I just get to hang out with these people and learn not only wonderful photography tips, but writing tips and all kinds of great business ideas. And I get to see cool people doing cool things and being successful at it. And it helps you to see that it's not. It's not meanies who win, you know?
That's a good point.
It's cool people who get ahead.
That's a really good point. Yeah, because everyone there seems to be working together and helping each other, not competing against each other. I mean, I suppose that makes sense.
Right.
And you're actually a part of a new book that you're writing with them. Is that right? Tell us
about
the book.
Yeah, and that's been really marvelous, too. So that Rich Harrington invited me to co-author along with Ron Sylvan and Nicole Young and Rich himself, as well as Gerard Murphy, a book on Lightroom, the develop module, just on how to
That's fantastic.
Work through it and make your pictures really soar. And then that book is being sponsored by Mosaic, which means, as I understand it, everyone's going to get a free copy if you like.
Oh, wow.
It's an ebook, so it'll be a sponsored download from Mosaic. As I and don't kill me if things change, but as I understand it, that's how it's going to rock. And Mosaic Archive is just this terrific.
That's great. So you'll send me a free copy, then I take it.
You betcha.
That's great. No, but that's of all the things you could do in Lightroom, the develop module, that's where it's at, right?
That's the fun one. Yeah, and then our next one coming up. Actually, I think I'm late on this one too. it's about the library module. And
oh, good. So there are other ones planned. Or that was the one. Gotcha.
We're doing the fun one first.
Makes sense. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw you when you were speaking at Skip Summer School, you were actually talking about social media with Scott Bourne. But beforehand, and I don't think this was official, but you taught about 30 minutes worth of Lightroom to everyone that was there. And I think someone was just like, oh, what's on your computer? And I remember you just kept going and going about Lightroom. I'm like, this is great. I didn't even pay for this. This is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
So do you have a couple of what are a couple of your favorite Lightroom tips?
Oh, let's see. In develop, so if you press the D key for develop, mm-hmm. that takes you right into develop. And then, that's one of my favorite tips, actually, is all the hotkeys, the keyboard shortcuts that you can use to navigate and get things done. Like Shift F makes your window full screen, and then hit it again, and it makes it totally full screen, and then hit it again, and it reduces it back to a manageable window. So that's a good one, too, is Shift F. But go into develop. And the first thing you want to do is go to the last tab on the right called camera calibration. And you want to change, if you're shooting RAW, you'll see where it says profile under camera calibration, you'll see a drop-down menu that says Adobe Standard. And you want to go in and change that. Change it to camera standard or camera neutral or camera faithful or camera portrait, whatever you use in your own camera, whatever picture style or picture control you've set your own camera to, you can change that right there, and suddenly your RAW image looks just like it did on the back of your camera. And that is just the most wonderful thing to get your picture looking like you remembered it looking.
That's a great point. You know, that's one of the biggest questions that people ask me about Lightroom, is they say, my pictures come in and they look great, and then like 3 seconds later, they look terrible, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
so what's going on there?
Well, so Lightroom, or excuse me, your camera creates a JPEG preview, and that's embedded in your RAW file. But Lightroom doesn't really keep that on top. It shows you your actual RAW image. And if you actually convert your images to DNG, it discards that, which helps to make your RAW files 20% smaller than they are coming in from the camera. So I also recommend converting your images to DNG. But then Adobe has created the same look for your pictures that you got out of the camera with these profiles.
The only
caveat to that is that that profile does not include the highlight and shadow recovery that your camera has built in, like active delighting on an Nikon, where it brightens the shadow areas. That stuff isn't built in, so you've got to. But it's just coming from your RAW image anyway, so you can just up the shadows a little bit and get that back.
Okay, that makes sense. So if I go in there and change that profile, I'll be able to make it look more like what I saw on the back of my camera. That's the idea, right?
Yeah, it'll look just about exactly like it did on the back of your camera.
That's awesome.
And that just gets you cooking right away in the right frame of mind, you know, to see your picture like you expected it to be.
Very cool.
And then you can also stop shooting RAW plus JPEG because you're just wasting space. So
that's a good point.
Caveat, though, I just rented a Pentax 645D digital medium format, and ooh. Adobe doesn't have the profile for that one. So I'm stuck with the Adobe Standard, and it's just not as good. So I did shoot RAW plus JPEG because their JPEGs were really phenomenal. Anyway.
So buy popular cameras.
That's right.
That's the moral of the story.
Although they just came out with the Z yesterday, and I'm really excited to get my hands on that one. ISO 208,000 video on a medium format. I mean, This is a game changer in my mind. It's a whole different world.
What's the name of the camera?
It's the Pentax 645Z. Z as in Z.
Yeah.
Z as in Z. Yeah.
All right.
Ooh. And it's only $8,500.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, which is only a little more than a 1DX. And I know a lot of your listeners out there think they need a 1DX. And
I could use a 1DX.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure you could. Uh-huh. But you need this one, man. This for your work would just soar with this thing. You would just be floored.
I'll have to go look it up.
Yeah, because now you get like a 40 millimeter lens point of view using a 50 millimeter lens compression, and it's just so cool.
Wow.
it's like driving. I used to drive this Buffalo delivery truck, and it was one of those flat front Isuzus, like the garbage truck. You know, there's no hood out in front of it.
Uh-huh.
And when you're sitting in that thing, the windshield came down below my knees. It was like driving a movie theater, and I could just see the entire world. It was amazing. And then you go home and get into like a or I rented a car the other day, and it was a Charger, and the window on that thing, it feels like, I don't know, like a porthole on a ship. It's so small.
So this new camera is going to be like your truck.
Exactly. It's like driving a Buffalo truck.
Buffalo truck.
Don't tell Pentax I said that.
Yeah. They might use that in their marketing. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, so, and then one more tip.
Go ahead.
Is in that same panel, just go down to the very bottom where it says blue primary and grab the blue slider for saturation and juice it up like 50% or more. And just about every picture you make will look better.
Really?
Yeah. It's a great little color slider. It just makes the color look so much better. And it says blue primary, but it makes the reds look good. It makes the greens look good. The only time I don't use it is if I'm doing like a nightscape of a city, because there's lots of blues there that end up being just too saturated or something. So,
Wow. And you're talking about in the profile. You're not talking about just the...
I'm talking about in the camera calibration tab. Yeah, down below the profile.
Yeah.
There's four sliders there.
And, wow. I know a lot about Lightroom, but that's an area I have pretty much always avoided. Except I think I may have done what you said and matched it to my camera, but then left it alone after that.
Right. So. Oh, and don't forget to make an import preset for that profile.
Exactly.
Then all your pictures come in looking just right, and you don't have to do that 3-second wait thing. So
it does it every time. That's right. All right. Fantastic. Hey, that's great, Levi. You really know what you're talking about. That's perfect. I love it. Let's talk a little bit about, here's one thing. I mean, I know you do a lot of portrait work. I know that that's a big part of your business. And I keep seeing, well, first I saw you and I thought it was, Steve Jobs portrait, with your hand on your chin. And then I saw your whole family. And then I kept noticing that my Facebook friends were all turning into the same type of portrait. And I'm realizing, oh, that's because Levi shot all their portraits and now it's their Facebook profile. What's the deal with your Steve Jobs portraits?
Oh, well, that's a really fun thing. And to describe what you're talking about, it's the cover of the biography of Steve Jobs.
Right.
And it was also it's that pretty iconic picture of Jobs with, like you said, like his hand up in front of his chin and kind of a very interesting, intriguing gaze.
Yeah, I think everyone knows what, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when he passed away, when he died in October of 2011, I thought it was a cool picture, and it was the landing site for Apple.com, and I was sitting there and looking at it with my photo club in Utah during our lunchtime meeting on Wednesday, and we're looking at it and going, man, that's a great picture. It's too bad he's dead, but it's a great picture. And we kind of dissected a little bit, and then I spent the afternoon recreating it for myself and my assistants. And then I invited everybody who wanted to come into my studio and make a similar portrait. And 100 people came in that month. It was really fun. And we did all these great portraits, and I got all these terrific stories from people about their interactions with Apple, even some people who had worked with Steve. And, lots of teachers talking about how great it had been to have free computers in their classrooms. I don't know about you, but my classes when I was a kid had Apple computers in them. I mean, I learned to type.
We
played,
do too, but
yeah, I played Ozark
but we paid
Trail,
for them.
Or, not Ozark Trail.
Yeah.
Oregon Trail, yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, and some of them paid for them. Some of them got great grants. Some of them were subsidized heavily, but they were available, you know. I mean, my dad had PCs at home, and that thing was useless in a classroom.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no Windows 95 in 1985, so it was really a game changer for schools, for sure. Anyway, people told me all these great stories, and we made great pictures, and it was a lot of fun. And now I've shot, probably 500 of them. And
oh, wow.
And
you're still doing them, right?
I'm still doing them. This is actually the mainstay of my business. I do it for everybody. And I do it for a professional headshot, you know, for people use it for their business cards and for their LinkedIn portraits, for their Facebook portraits. And if they use it, it really causes a stir and it's quite memorable. It's unforgettable, really, because it's such an iconic image and, it's powerful for people. People talk about it, and then, you know, it leads to business.
Yeah, right. That's pretty cool. And I imagine that when they come in, they don't do just that. They do other stuff as well, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of them chicken out, honestly, and don't use it for their main portrait. But if they do use it, it is a really powerful tool for them.
Huh. Oh, that's really cool.
We'll have to do some when I come out of Chicago this summer.
Yes, I can't wait. Well, you know what? Let's talk about that. So you are coming this summer, June 28th. It's the Out of Chicago Photography Conference. And we've got 16 speakers talking, and you're going to be one of them, and you're going to be teaching Lightroom. Tell us a little bit about what you think you're going to hit.
Oh, we're just going to make our pictures look terrific. The great thing about Lightroom is that it's simple to use and it's not like something crazy over the top. And so I feel like what I do in Lightroom is still true to my photography. You know, I don't feel like a digital artist using Lightroom.
Right.
Although
you can.
I can, but yeah, right. But almost everything I do in Lightroom is something I could have done in the darkroom. You know, I could have used a different paper to make it more saturated, mm-hmm. or I could have used a different film to have different effects in my image. And then I could dodge and burn different areas of the picture and use sharpening masks and all these things. This was all darkroom work. And now I can do it digitally. My hands don't stink when I'm done. And it's kind of free. You know, we've already got it. We paid once and we don't have to rent darkroom time and all these things. I kind of miss darkroom stuff, but this
yeah.
is really
well, there's the Creative Cloud too, so I don't know if
exactly.
It's...
I mean, for $10 a month, you get these powerful, powerful tools.
And, yeah, yeah. I don't know how.
I'm in favor.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know why. If you're a photographer, that's what you should be doing right now.
Absolutely.
Especially if they keep the price where it is right now, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Well, sign up now and get grandfathered in, and you'll be a happy camper. So
exactly. Go do that. Everyone, go do that.
So we'll talk about how to make Lightroom Develop Module really work for you. And then if we have to, we'll talk about some library stuff and organization. Oh, I'll help people answer their questions for Lightroom for sure. And I'm totally available throughout the rest of the conference as well for help with it. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know if all the people that are signed up for this know you, Levi, but you are like it's amazing. I mean, you'll go out of your way to help anyone, and it's not just one or two answers, it's everything they want to know. So we always appreciate that.
Well,
thank you
fun.
So much.
You know, it's
well, I know, and that's what makes it so great is that you're enjoying yourself. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be great. We're so glad to have you at the conference this summer.
Well, I'm excited. I mean, the other teachers are incredible. I mean, Bob Coates is coming all the way from Arizona.
Yep.
And he's a wild teacher as well.
Yeah, I've never met Bob.
Don't,
I'm looking forward to it.
Don't schedule his class at the same time as mine, so.
Wait, say that again?
Don't schedule his class
oh,
at the same
right,
time
right,
as mine.
Oh, right, 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 right. Yeah, no,
I don't
no,
want
no.
the competition,
I've actually,
and I
already,
want to sit in on his.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we've got a plan so that, yeah, no, it'll work out. Yeah, and then we've got so many great photographers coming from, you know, just kind of the Midwest and from some of the best photographers from Chicago, too. So if you come to the conference, these people are going to learn a lot. But
plus, we're doing these photo walks in the evenings.
Right, right. So
get out and shoot. This isn't a sit in the classroom and watch people do stuff conference. This is going to be fun.
That's right. So we're going to learn all the stuff. We're going to go out on the city actually the night before. So the conference is June 28th, but the night before on Friday night, there will be photo walks that night led by the presenters, and then there's going to be photo walks the night of on Saturday night. So Levi, you don't know the city like some of the people do, but I imagine that you're going to make the best of it when you lead your group out into the streets of Chicago. What do you think?
Oh, you bet. And I'm not... I love to shoot landscapes and architecture and cityscapes and things, but I really get excited talking to people in a place. And so if when I go out to walk, I'll shoot the streets and I'll shoot the buildings, but... only when there's not somebody walking by, because I'm going to engage with people and make a portrait as often as possible.
No, that's great. Yeah, no, that's perfect. I mean, it goes right along with what the people want to learn that are coming to our conference. And the people just have no idea how much energy you have. And once they get out in the streets with you, I mean, everyone's going to feel it. And I can't wait to be there. So it's going to be a great night. And I think it's going to be a great weekend for everyone involved.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see him.
And the conference itself is June 27th and 28th. 27th.
Did you say $150 bucks?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For 2 days? It's a day and a half, you know?
Yeah.
Evening and then all day the next day?
Yep. Full day and two photo walks, two evening
that
photo walks.
That is so cheap. I mean, I love all of the Kelby One training that they have out
mm-hmm.
there.
Oh, yeah.
But their stuff is $99 bucks for a day in one class with one teacher and... no photo walks. This is really a steal of a deal.
I think people are going to have a really good time. I think it's going to be fun. We already got a ton of people signed up, and I know we got a lot more coming, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Thanks, Levi. I feel like you're interviewing me now. Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. So last thing, you said that you had your club out in Utah, and I know that club was huge, and you guys met in your studio. But you've really kind of branched that out, and you've got this Photographer's Adventure Club. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, the pack is really incredible. You know, Smug Mug used to sponsor 56 clubs around the world, and because of ridiculous tax laws in some states, they've had to cancel that, and they're paying these enormous fines for running supposed business operations, meaning a club that they were donating money to. And so because of that, they had to cancel some of their monetary support anyway. And they still provide a lot of help for us. But so Nick Papagallo really took this on and has established, taken that same network of clubs and expanded his Photographer's Adventure Club to include all of these. And so we've got one in Chicago now too, the pack there.
And
we just get together and learn how to make pictures. You know, we invite speakers, we have sponsors who give us swag to give away and we do photo walks and we do classes and it's just a lot of fun. It's a great group. There's a terrific blog with tips. And for people who want to participate and learn, it's a great place to go. For people who like to help others, it's a terrific place to go. Especially in Chicago, we need some active people there to help get things going. If you want to sign up on the Facebook page for Chicago in particular, because I imagine most of our attendees for the conference this summer will be in Chicago.
Where do people need to go to? It's on Facebook.
Yeah, you go to facebook.com/groups/ChicagoPack, PAC.
All right, and I'll put a link in the show notes as well, and hopefully we get some Chicago people out there.
Yeah, it's just a fun bunch. And, you know, one of the great things about it is as you travel the country, you've got a club to go to. And you can go on there, like if you come to Portland and you want to go make pictures, you can come and join our club. And then post on there and ask for suggestions for where to go. And somebody will probably want to go shoot with you, too, because
that's really
a nice
cool
thing.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a really good point. You've almost got a built-in club already wherever you go
right,
around the
right.
country.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. Plus, it's people in your area that you can go shoot with. It's people in your area you can ask questions of. You know, if you're a professional and you've got questions about a client situation, or if you're, you know, an emerging professional and you've got questions... It's people locally that you can go and ask. It's people you can refer to for backup shoots. You know, you've got a wedding and you can't cover it. These are people you can learn to trust and work with in all kinds of things.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. And I really like what you put together with your club originally. And I can see that, you know, what Nick has done now here, it's a great idea.
Yeah. My club in Utah, they're still going super strong. I think there's about 600 people in it now. And we just met like crazy, and they still do. They still meet twice or three times a week. In fact, they're meeting right now as we speak on a Wednesday night. Wednesday, they've got two. Without me.
So Beatles. Sad.
It is. And I just moved into a new building here in Portland, and we're going to get ourselves going more regularly here also. And I'm really excited about that. So.
That's great. It seems like wherever you go, everyone wants to follow. So that's great, Levi. Glad to hear all the success you're having, too. And I'm looking here on your site. It's sdesignsphotography.com, right?
That's my general stuff site. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I see some wonderful shots on here of Tetons, and you've got cars, and you got people, and you got all sorts of stuff. But you also have your business site. Is that right?
That's right, and that's just levisim.com, and that's where you can see continuing Steve Jobs portraits. There's a ton of those on there. If I photographed you recently, you might just find that one on the splash page there. That's my main business page. My blog has everything going back actually 5 years today. I bought my first DSLR. And started making pictures.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks.
That's fantastic.
And then, so this blog goes back 5 years, starting in about 2 weeks. And it's got all my junk. You can see the progression and see that I've gotten a little bit better over that time. But
I know you're tempted to delete a lot of those old ones, aren't you? I know exactly what you mean. But
you know,
but
it's a good metric for yourself to go back and see.
That's right. But it's a good learning tool for everyone else, too. So
Absolutely. It's
amazing how far you've come in 5 years, and to see the people that you're working with and the things that you're doing. It's just amazing, Levi. I mean,
this is
great. And we're so happy to have you come to the conference this summer. It's going to be a lot of fun. And tell us one more time, where can people find you?
You can find me at levisim.com. On Twitter, I'm PhotoLevi, and I'm active on Facebook. Come talk with me on Facebook, too. I'm trying to get going more on Google Plus again. And also, if you want to see latest stuff from me, that'll be on photofocus.com. That's my repository for techniques and my latest work, generally.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much, Levi. Really appreciate it, and we'll see you this summer.
Thanks, Chris. Keep rocking it, man.
Great. Bye-bye.
Well, you better come see Levi this summer. You know that he's going to be awesome. He's rocking it. So we love Levi. And make sure you come see him this summer at the Out of Chicago Conference. In our first three episodes, we've already hit three great locations. And today we've got a fourth one. We've gotten the Chicago Botanic Garden, the Chicago Theater, and Navy Pier. And so we've already talked about a few great places, and this is no exception. Today's is going to be Buckingham Fountain. Buckingham Fountain is one of my favorite places to shoot in the summer because they'll play the light show. They'll play kind of a music to go along with it. It's really a pretty cool show to watch. At the end of our night photography tour last weekend, we stopped here for a little while. We also saw the fireworks from across the way at Navy Pier. That was pretty fun. And Buckingham Fountain can give you some great shots. Now, they play that light show on the hour starting at 9 in the morning, and it goes all the way until 10 at night, and then they do one last one at 10:35. And the show itself is like 20 minutes long. Once you hear the Battle Hymn of the Republic, you know that you're on your last song. You're feeling patriotic. Get your last shots in. If there's fireworks going on, can't help but get some goosebumps. And it's really a great place to shoot. So some tips for shooting it would be, well, I would mix it up in terms of using a long lens and using a wide angle lens. If you're going to use a wide angle lens, try getting really close to the fountain itself and get the entire skyline in the background. You could even shoot it as a panorama shot where you're going to stitch multiple images together. if you want to get more of a shot where you kind of highlight one of the buildings, say maybe the Sears Tower or one of the other buildings, one of the buildings along Michigan Avenue, and you want to highlight that kind of against the tower, then you want to stand back a little further and use a longer lens. That'll give you that compression where it will bring the buildings in the background up closer to it. And so like Sears Tower and the Buckingham Fountain together, that's kind of a cool shot. It really says Chicago. So that's an idea too. So long lens, wide angle lens, put that stuff together. Now, people love shooting things like waterfalls because you can get your long exposures, but they got to use neutral density filters and kind of go to a lot of effort to get a long exposure so that your camera can capture it and it's not totally white and totally blown out. Well, this is a great chance to try some long exposures and to really blur out some the trails of water. You can get it to blur out because you're going to be shooting at night. You're going to be shooting like 20-second, 30-second long exposures, and it gives a really cool look. It gets a little tricky because the colors are constantly changing on the lights, but you get some really cool shots. Some of my tips would be to get close-up shots of, like, I don't know if they're seahorses or what they are, but they're kind of cool. They're the things spraying a lot of the water out. That's one thing to get close-up shots of. There's also lots of details in the fountain itself. So get some close-ups, get some wide angles, and really kind of work the scene here. Close, wide, medium, and keep going for a few shots. If you're going to shoot bracketing for an HDR image, this is a good opportunity to do it. Again, you may only decide, hey, I want to keep just that one image, but I think that shooting it bracketed is a good idea here. Another cool shot you can go for, there's always going to be a lot of people around, and sometimes you're like, oh man, it just kind of, if we could clear a couple of these people out of here, I'd have a winning shot. But on the other hand, sometimes it's the people that really make the shot. And maybe the best way to do that with Buckingham Fountain, if you're shooting it at night, is to go for a silhouette shot. So expose it properly for the real bright lights of Buckingham Fountain, which means that any person then that doesn't have a direct light shining on them, and they won't, will end up becoming a silhouette. If you use a long lens and you get some people in there, you get some kind of cool shots, you know, people holding hands or arm in arm or a family in front of it. You can get some kind of cool shots that are silhouettes. So stand back a little ways, maybe use a longer lens. Don't be too creepy, but get some cool shots of people in front of it, and they'll make for a really good silhouette shot. All right, we're getting near the end, and that means it's time for the pick of the week. And this week, I'm going to go with the Flickr app for the iPhone and for, I assume, the iPad as well. And I've been using it on the iPhone, and it's fantastic on there. It does a great job of showing you your photo stream and showing you everyone else's photos. And it makes it really easy to comment, to favorite, to find your shots, to see people's comments, respond to them. And they've had a couple of updates to the app, you know, kind of totally revamped over the last couple of years, but this one really seems to take it to a new level and really is well done. I think the people at Flickr, at Yahoo, that owns Flickr, I think they've been doing a really good job making Flickr better. It's kind of upset some people, some of the changes they've made, but I don't know. I think it's great. I've seen a lot of people get off of there, but I think that Flickr is doing a great job. I think it's really one of the places to be as a photographer. I think that it's a great place to get your images out there. And this app is a great way to kind of keep track of everything that's going, comment back on people's photos, and it really is a lot better than what they've had in the past. So this week's pick of the week is the new Flickr app. You can get it in the iTunes store, and I think that you will really like the new app. So of course I want you to subscribe to Out of Chicago. Of course I want you to come sign up for the Out of Chicago conference at the end of June. This week, really what I want you to do, please go leave a review on iTunes. Please subscribe. I've noticed that that we've already gotten into the new and noteworthy section for visual media. I really want to get that up onto the main page for new and noteworthy for all of the podcasts on iTunes. So to do that, we've got to get a lot of reviews. I've got to get a lot of subscriptions right in the beginning when it first comes out. And I think that'll really help to grow this audience and make this worth putting all this time and effort into. So I really appreciate it. Please go leave a review, leave a review and subscribe to the podcast. Thank you very much and good night. We will see you next week.